It is Wednesday, February 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump wants a military parade in Washington. Vice President Mike Pence says the U.S. will announce new sanctions against North Korea.
So we're all quite a bit curious to see exactly what this is going to entail.
And we get reviews on singer Justin Timberlake's performance at the recent Super Bowl. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump wants a military parade in Washington like the one he watched last Bastille Day in France. He's ordered Pentagon leaders to make plans for the show of military might in the American capital. No date has been set for the parade, but the Defense Department says it's in the process of determining specific details. I'm joined by Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Carla, how did the Bastille Day military parade in Paris inspire President Trump to want a similar event here in the U.S.?
Well, President Donald Trump has always touted how great the United States military is. There were actually people from the United States military participating in this parade, and he saw everything going on in Paris and how happy everybody was and how the display was a really pro-France event and a really pro-military event. And he wants the same thing for the United States, according to some officials. So that is why he tasked others to try to make this parade happen at some point. I've been told that no date is set. There are people looking at July 4th, which is the United States Independence Day, as well as Veterans Day or Memorial Day, but it's still very early in the planning stages.
Yeah, I happened to watch part of a Bastille Day parade in Paris about 22 years ago, but what has the military reception been to this idea?
Well, the military tries not to take a political stance on anything. Again, as I mentioned earlier, General Dunford, the top U.S. general, he's in Bangkok right now. And in Bangkok, he said that he's aware of the president's request. It's in the initial stages. They always will try to meet the president's direction. But some of the retired military brass have been criticizing this. They've called it a colossal waste of money. I was speaking with retired Army Major General Paul Eaton. He said that about him. It's not about the military. It's his ego that is being filled and not actually helping and celebrating the military. And he also pointed out that this could not be coming out at a worse time because we are so close to potentially another government shutdown, which is when the military has to work for free. And we're arguing over the budget, and you've got Defense Secretary Jim Mattis talking to Congress saying, pass a budget. We need all the money that we can. And then you've got the president saying, let's waste money on a colossal parade that will cost tons and tons of money, bringing in the tanks. Then you have to make room for these in wherever you decide to have this event. So not a lot of people who are retired are really liking this idea.
Mm. Well, in the past, there have been military parades in the U.S. There was one during the tenure of President George H.W. Bush, and that followed the Persian Gulf War in 1991.
Right, and that is another point that many have made, including retired Admiral John Kirby, who was a spokesman in the Obama administration. He says the last time we had one was in 1991, and that was when we came back from the Gulf War. We are still in wars right now. So to throw a big parade is, in his view, kind of a slap in the face to those who are still fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and who are preparing for a potential fight, God forbid, should something happen on the Korean Peninsula. So it's something that has happened before, but the United States hasn't really accepted the idea of these big parades because the United States doesn't need a parade to show how strong it is. We have agreements all over the world. We are the biggest military in the entire world. We show that across the globe. We do not need one singular event, one little parade to make that statement.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Carla. That's Carla Babb reporting from the Pentagon. Time now for social media. Well, perhaps not surprisingly, trending today is hashtag military parade. At mention the White House turns tweets, the Washington Post is reporting that President Trump wants to have a military parade. Why is Trump trying to turn the USA into the Soviet Union or North Korea? As a vet, we do not flaunt our military strength at home. We flaunt it on the battlefield. But at mention Case 1030 tweets, why the H not? Celebrating the men and women who defend our rights so others can protest or celebrate their diversity. But God forbid we celebrate those that defend their rights to do so. President Trump, great idea. Also trending is famed music producer Quincy Jones. In an interview with New York Magazine, Jones says the Beatles were the worst musicians in the world. He also said Michael Jackson stole a lot of stuff and that he dated Ivanka Trump, the president's daughter. Reaction has been intense. At mention, Sean King tweets, hold up, full stop, stop everything you're doing. Read this interview with Quincy Jones. It's the craziest, juiciest tell-all interview I've ever read. It's so crazy, I thought it was a spoof. At mention, Wellesley Lowry tweets, this is the wildest Q&A I have ever read in my life. And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. South Africa's president continues talks with his deputy, fueling speculation that he may resign. Kenya deports an opposition lawyer after a treason charge. A Pakistani court convicts 31 men in the lynching of a student, and Zimbabwe's opposition leader names an interim party leader. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Two new but separate studies provide fresh insight into planets orbiting the nearby red dwarf star TRAPPIST-1. One of the studies, published in the journal Nature Astronomy, suggests the atmospheres of at least three of the seven TRAPPIST-1 exoplanets do not seem to be as hydrogen-rich as our solar system's gas giant planets, such as Neptune. Researchers involved with the study say that this finding means the planet's atmospheres may contain heavier gases like those found in Earth's atmosphere. The second study, published in the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics, contains detailed calculations of the masses as well as the density and makeup of all the TRAPPIST-1 planets. Researchers found that the planets are mostly rocky and contain up to 5% water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, SpaceX successfully launches its largest rocket yet. Vice President Mike Pence met with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in Tokyo on Wednesday to reaffirm the United States' solidarity with its longtime ally. The visit comes amidst U.S. efforts to reassure and refocus American allies on the growing nuclear threat from North Korea, with visits to Japan and South Korea. On Thursday, Pence travels to South Korea, promoting his administration's campaign of maximum pressure against the North as the South pursues a diplomatic opening around the Winter Olympics. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is traveling with the vice president, and he tells me about Wednesday's talks in the Japanese capital.
Well, there was a bit of a surprise, Sarah, in that the vice president made an announcement that the United States will soon roll out what he called the toughest and most aggressive sanctions ever against North Korea. He didn't give any details about what sectors the sanctions would cover or when they would be announced. Of course, there are already multiple sanctions by the United States, other countries, and the United Nations on North Korea, so we're all quite a bit curious to see exactly what this is going to entail.
What was the reaction from Japanese Prime Minister Abe?
Well, the Japanese Prime Minister is quite supportive of what the United States has been doing. He said they spent a good deal of time today talking about North Korea and that the policies of the United States and Japan are completely aligned about Pyongyang. They both mentioned about the slight loosening of tension between North and South Korea. Of course, the North sending some athletes and officials to the Winter Olympic Games, which are getting underway in Pyeongchang in South Korea. Those games will be attended by the U.S. Vice President, but the Japanese Prime Minister warned that we shouldn't get our hopes up too high, noting that North Korea has a military parade planned for Thursday, which is the first day that there will actually be events at the Winter Olympic Games.
Well, Mr. Pence has indicated that he wants to, one of the reasons he's on this trip is he wants to provide, I guess, balance as opposed to the North Korean, what he would call propaganda. And is also, he is going to be accompanied by Fred Warmbier, who is the father of Otto Warmbier, who is the American college student who died after being jailed by North Korea.
Right. There's perception that having Mr. Warmbier alongside the U.S. Vice President, as a White House official put it, will remind the world of the atrocities that happen in North Korea. And yes, this is definitely a part of a campaign to counter what the White House is calling an attempt at a charm offensive by North Korea by sending athletes, officials, and even some cheerleaders and other entertainers to South Korea. And there's obviously quite a bit of attention about this in South Korea, some of it negative, but in some part this is being welcomed by a lot of South Koreans. So the Vice President, by attending the Winter Games and being in Seoul on Thursday and meeting with the South Korean President Moon Jae-in, definitely wants to keep on the agenda and in the headlines a reminder about the brutalities that have been committed by North Korea, and also to remind everybody that they're still pursuing this nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Tokyo. SpaceX, the 16-year-old private space technology company founded by billionaire entrepreneur, engineer, and inventor Elon Musk, successfully launched its largest rocket yet into space Tuesday. The 27-engine, 70-meter-tall Falcon Heavy is on its maiden flight into an eventual solar orbit. Meeting the reporters later, Musk said the rocket surpassed his expectations.
We're really excited about today. Incredibly proud of the SpaceX team. They've done an incredible job of creating really the most advanced rocket in the world and the biggest rocket in the world. I'm still trying to absorb everything that happened because it seems surreal to me. You know, I had this image of just a giant explosion on the pad with, you know, a wheel bouncing down the road and like the Tesla logo landing somewhere with a thud. But fortunately, that's not what happened. The mission seems to have gone really as well as one could have hoped.
The Falcon Heavy, launched from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, is actually three smaller Falcon 9 rockets bolted together side by side. It's designed to put more than 60 metric tons into a standard low orbit at a relatively economical cost of $90 million per launch. On board was a Tesla Roadster off the assembly line of Musk's electric car company as a mock payload. Morris Jones, an Australian-based independent space analyst, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the Falcon Heavy, with 5 million pounds of thrust, is currently the world's largest rocket, though not the largest ever made. He said it's also cost-effective because so much of it is reusable. U.S. Space Agency NASA Acting Administrator Robert Lightfoot congratulated SpaceX for what he called this tremendous accomplishment. But Jones was asked if this puts SpaceX at the front of the line for lucrative NASA contracts.
It should put SpaceX in line for some NASA contracts and public and private sector contracts. Whether or not NASA decides to embrace SpaceX more profoundly in the future remains to be seen, because exactly who gets launch contracts for NASA is a highly politicized process, and they'd like to share contracts around between different companies in different congressional districts. So I think politics will probably have a bigger role to play than the engineering.
Does this mission have any other purpose than just to test this massive rocket?
No, testing the rocket, showing that it works, is really the main objective. And any other thing, stunts you do, like launching a car into space, that's basically just icing on the cake.
So this will just be in orbit somewhere out in space in perpetuity?
It's orbiting the sun, not the Earth, and it's in an egg-shaped orbit that takes it between the orbit of Earth and the orbit of Mars. Now, they've been very careful to make sure that it won't actually travel too close to Mars or hit the planet Mars. But in theory, the orbit could keep it out there for millions of years.
Is the U.S. in the lead as far as public-private space exploration?
The U.S. is definitely the world leader in terms of the privatization of space exploration. And it's not just private rockets. It's satellite developers, services from satellites, such as communications and imaging. So in terms of getting everything going across every angle of space commerce, America is not just in the lead, but still in the lead by a very large margin.
Is this launch on Tuesday a turning point for SpaceX?
It's a major turning point for SpaceX because prior to this, they were a good rocket company, but in some ways, what they were offering was in the same class as what other companies could offer. This one is larger than anything else that anyone else has got. So at this point, SpaceX doesn't just become a serious company. It becomes a Mike Tyson of the space world.
Space analyst Morris Jones. Meanwhile, SpaceX, having logged a series of successful launches after a launch pad failure in early 2016, is developing an even larger rocket called the BFR, or Big Falcon Rocket. Musk hopes to send paying tourists into space. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. People watch the Super Bowl not just for the football, but for the halftime entertainment as well. VOA Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with details about last Sunday's big extravaganza.
Let's talk about Justin Timberlake and his brand new album, which just came out a week ago, and his brand new song and his Super Bowl performance. Justin Timberlake, who began on Star Search back in the 80s when it was hosted by Ed McMahon and then made his way up to the Disney Mickey Mouseketeer Club when he was a member of that as a teenager. Then, of course, with NSYNC and all the big hits he had. Now, Justin is a big solo act. He's a movie actor as well as a songwriter and a musician and a father, too, to a baby that's almost two now, Silas Randall, married to actress Jessica Biel. But it was Justin Timberlake, center stage at the Super Bowl, that's caused a lot of controversy. First of all, his performance on Super Bowl Sunday has, rated his performance as number 10 on the Super Bowl lists. Last year, they had 111 million people watching. This year, it was down to 103 million. So the Super Bowl viewership for his performance at halftime took a little hit. He was on stage. It was interesting. I don't know if you had a chance to see the Super Bowl.
I did see some of it.
He started underground and made his way out into the stadium and danced with the people. Some people are calling it underwhelming, that it really didn't deliver on the promise of special, unique, wow factor, memorable moments. I mean, he just came out and he just did Justin, and he danced in the crowd and danced on the stage with his background dancers. He sang an array of his hits back with solo albums. His last solo album was the 2020 Experience a number of years ago. An artist does take a risk when they take some time off, as Justin's done. His new album is called Man of the Woods. Let's check out the new single called Filthy. Here's Justin Timberlake.
What you gonna do with all that? I need.
Well, Larry, among the criticisms, I believe it was also because he did like a Prince number, a tribute to Prince, because
yes.
Minneapolis is Prince's hometown.
He said that he had to do it. He felt kind of endeared to Prince. He has proclaimed that Prince was an icon, an idol, an influence on his career, although there's some that say that Prince didn't care for Justin Timberlake's music, and they felt it was inappropriate, and Justin had even rented out to Paisley Park, Prince's home, to have a listening party for his album prior to the Super Bowl. So a lot of people were rubbed the wrong way by some of the things that Justin did. It's a good thing that Justin did not do what he initially planned to do, which was to have a hologram of Prince perform with him. Instead, he opted for having images of Prince portrayed up on a big giant screen, which was kind of a cloth blowing in the wind. But nonetheless, he sang "If I Would Die for You," which is a big Prince hit. "I Would Die for You," and it wasn't anything that people would walk away. I found Pink's performance of the national anthem before the game to be more of a wow factor to me than watching Justin sing some of the old songs that I've heard him sing so many times before. So it just kind of was underwhelming. But the new song is kind of back. It's a retro-sounding song, and it captures some of the 80s music from, like, the guys in New Edition and things like that. It's very 80-esque, filthy, and so it's typical Justin Timberlake. We'll wait and see how the rest of the album sounds. He calls this album Americana and folk. You wouldn't know it from the first song, Filthy, that's for sure. But we'll wait and see how the rest of it turns out for Justin Timberlake.
And when is the full album going to be released?
It was released last week. It was released on February 2nd, 2 days before the Super Bowl. So everybody got a chance to get the album. It's just kind of taking root now. The first song is Filthy. He hasn't released any more singles. He is going to go out on a world tour, I'm sure, to support the album as well.
Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. Well, the music of Justin Timberlake brings an end to the show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the past 12 months, ISIS has lost the vast majority of its territory in Iraq and most of the towns it once held in Syria. However, the areas once occupied by ISIS must now be stabilized so the people who have been displaced by the war can safely return. As ISIS militants fled, they left behind explosive devices to hinder recovery efforts and kill returning civilians to dissuade others from returning home. The U.S. government and its partners on the ground continue to work at great personal risk to meet the immediate needs of Syrians and Iraqis. They are working to clear areas of these mines and other explosive hazards, as well as educating and warning families about the risks. In Syria, for example, coalition-supported explosive remnants of war efforts have led to the survey and clearance of over 90 priority sites, to include schools, over 20 in Raqqa City, health facilities, including the Tabqa and Raqqa hospitals, bridges and water plants, and allow for follow-on stabilization work to begin. Mine risk education is also underway across Raqqa Governorate, reaching over 30,000 beneficiaries, mostly children and young adults. Clearing the unprecedented amount of explosive hazards emplaced by ISIS is a monumental task, but one critical to the recovery of liberated areas. Refugees and internally displaced persons cannot safely return to communities contaminated with explosive remnants of war and improvised explosive devices until these deadly hazards are addressed. So far, the U.S. Department of State has allocated over $104 million to this effort, and U.S.-funded partners have cleared about 45 tons of explosive hazards in Iraq and over 1.4 million square meters in Syria. It has provided some $841 million of foreign military financing funding to Iraq, Jordan, and Lebanon for military equipment that will help these countries better control their borders, defend their national territories, counter violent extremist organizations, and increase operational training. ensuring that ISIS is defeated remains an urgent priority and the United States' number one priority in the Middle East. The United States will continue to stand with the Iraqi people, the people of Syria, and our partners around the world in our shared fight against ISIS until it is defeated. There is still much work to do.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.